integrity in each of the services is also critical to a strong military. General Amos, I have become friends with Major James Wyrick, United States Marine Corps, who I sincerely believe is a man of integrity. Did you fear Major Wyrick at any point?
My name is James Wyrick, and this is Military Justice, my podcast about the system of justice that governs those who protect our nation.
President Trump signed three more executive orders this afternoon. One outlines a reorganization of the National Security Council. A second executive order implements a five-year lobbying ban on administration officials and a lifetime ban.
You're fired. Okay, that's the best Trump apprentice impression I can do, but that ties in perfectly with today's episode. Welcome back. Today we will be discussing the recent executive order issued by President Trump that changes the composition of the National Security Council. Thus, some of the prior members of the National Security Council are fired. We're joined today by Carl Forsling. He's a senior contributor for Task and Purpose, a place where I've written and still continue to write. He's a great writer, experienced veteran, and just all around a very bright dude. He has his MBA from the Wharton School, and I believe the rest of the Trumps all went to the Wharton School. So Carl has all the inside scoop and knows the secret handshakes, and he will be filling us all in on that information. So before we go to Carl's interview, I have some audio from President Trump signing the executive order that changes the composition of the National Security Council. And if you're wondering, that isn't gunfire in the background. It seems to just be a tremendous number of cameras going off as he signs the executive order.
This is the organization of the National Security Council and the Homeland Security Council. You know pretty much what it represents a lot, and also a lot of efficiency, and I think a lot of additional safety. People have been talking about doing this for a long time, like many years. Okay. Here, Mr. Vice President.
Carl, it's great to have you here. Why don't you tell the listeners about yourself?
Well, it's good to be here. I'm a recently retired Marine officer while I was in the Marine Corps. Served as a CH-46 pilot, flight instructor, transitioned to the V-22 back in the early days when they stood it back up again, and also been an advisor to Afghan Border Police. Recently, I've flown as a flight officer at the Baltimore Police Department. Now I work for a defense contractor, and I'm also a senior columnist for Task and Purpose.
Yeah, and that's where you and I have known each other for probably 2 years now, but this is the first time we've ever spoken.
That's the miracle of the internet. It's amazing how well you get to know people without actually meeting them.
Yeah, that's very true. We've both written for Task and Purpose, and you still write for them. Is it every week you've got a column?
For the last year or so, I've had pretty much a four-time a month, so basically a weekly column with them.
And you usually have military, national security, leadership.
Right. It's kind of a potpourri. They give me some tips and then I come up with some stuff. But it's a lot of military culture and then some defense news analysis, kind of and a little bit of pop culture mixed in there as well, depending on what the topic of the day is.
Yeah. And I'll make sure I put up your Twitter handle in the show notes, but it's at Carl Forsling. So news, that's what we're here, and your analysis, that's what we're here for today. I think the name of this podcast episode is You're Fired, because it seems that the National Security Council has had a number of people that used to sit in that council, or at least in the Principals Committee, fired. And I'll just go back for the listeners. National Security Council was created in 1947. Prior to that, it was just the State Department that was engaging with foreign nations. And with the rise of the Soviet Union and some other issues that were going on in the world, they created a larger council, an interagency council, meaning representatives from, you know, different departments to assist the president on integration of domestic, foreign, and military policies related to national security and to facilitate interoperation or interagency operations. Original seven members: President, Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, the heads of the Army, Navy, and Air Force, and the chair of the National Security Resources Board. So it's undergone a lot of changes over the years, but the most significant has come, or one of the most significant has just come up. What are your takes on this, Carl?
As with anything with the current administration, a lot of times the structural stuff gets lost in with the personality aspects of it. So, and they're very hard to disentangle, because obviously you're talking about someone as pro or con, people have very strong feelings about, you know, in particular Steve Bannon taking a place as the president's strategist on the council. That throws so much emotion into the argument. We sort of lose the ball as far as who was added and who's lost. Obviously the big one.
And Steve Bannon, tell me, because I really didn't follow it that closely, but he seems to be the Karl Rove of President Trump. Is that fair to say?
That's his basic position. He's the political, you know, right now he's the chief strategist. He's also apparently got a miniature think tank within NSC now called Strategic Initiatives Group. So he's definitely taken a more prominent role. You know, his equivalent with Obama was Axelrod.
Okay, right.
So, but obviously he's a much more public figure than yeah, maybe Rove was up there as well, but definitely much more polarizing.
And from my research, I don't believe that Rove ever sat on this, or at least on the principals group, because I think what we're talking about is there's a much larger National Security Council with probably 20 members, but then there's the principals that is right around 10 to a dozen.
Right. Think of it, you know, in the military, be like the department heads meeting. You know, there's a large organization, but then the actual, you know, heads of each of these organizations come together to meet one-on-one. And the principals committee only itself was only started with the first Bush administration. So it's somewhat of a modern invention, although
principals committee is everybody that gets to sit at the table, and their deputies are the ones on in the chairs along the wall, right?
Right. And the thing with Axelrod in particular was, and he made this distinction recently himself, is that he attended the principals committee as an invited member, but he self-backbenched himself. Basically, he would listen so they could advise the president on what happened and basically how to sell it politically, but he didn't participate in this discussion as a member, you know, making a recommendation to the president.
So let me go back. I interrupted you, and I was agreeing very much with your point that, as you were saying, that everything is kind of hypersensitive because of our current political climate.
Right. And it's hard to separate, but I think it does touch on why we have organizations structured the way we do, is to sort of take personalities out of it and to make sure the president is getting as close to objective advice as he can. Obviously, the things they advise him on are matters of opinion, but each of these organizations represented by the principals has a take and evaluation on whatever matter they're discussing. And, you know, these organizations are designed to make that a replicable process and an organized process to come up with a recommendation for the president to act on.
Yeah, and it seems when looking at some of the major changes that were made, so from the principals committee, they removed the Secretary of Energy, the Director of the Office of Management and Budget, and then seems the two larger ones that people seem to be up in arms about are the Director of National Intelligence and the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Yeah, it's. I think that the strategist addition would not be as explosive if it wasn't for the subtractions, because it lends the perception that you're giving him more importance than, obviously, DNI and then Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff have very obvious national security expertise that they bring to the table. But you're substituting, this appears at least to the outside, as if you're doing a direct substitution. And, you know, you could make the argument that the Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff works for SecDef, who is still at the council. But there's also the measure that Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff adds a tactical and military expertise that a SecDef doesn't necessarily have.
He's the primary military advisor for the president.
Right. Yeah. And somewhat mitigated in this case, because former General Mattis is in the SecDef chair and obviously brings, you know, a lifetime of military expertise. But again, going to that personality thing, do you build the institution around the personalities, or you you put the personalities in the right slots in the institution. Sort of a snake chasing its tail kind of thing. I'm not sure what they were thinking when they organized it this way.
Yeah, and it seems if it was personality driven, our service, the Marine Corps, has actually done very well in this current administration with General Kelly, General Mattis, you know, both being in the cabinet. And it's odd that General Dunford, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, is moved out while Mattis remains. I mean, obviously one's got to move, or one has to remain, but it's hard to discern a rhyme or reason about this change.
Right. I mean, you could make an argument, you know, that's a streamlining, because to step back a second, when under the George W. Bush administration, they created the Homeland Security Council to be a Homeland Security analog to the NSC. Then President Obama merged the two, which made the NSC HSC combination much larger. So you have a very large working group. And now President Trump is now separating those two organizations out again, but really not culling that many people out of the NSC. And it's a kind of an odd move, making two working groups about a subject that's kind of interrelated. I think the HSC, President Obama rightly thought the HSC was duplicating the work of the NSC.
And yeah, the Homeland Security Council created under Bush and only under Bush. And that had a lot of overlap as even the people that would be at the meeting from the NSC.
Right. And obviously, when you're having overlapping membership and you've got a Venn diagram of people who are going, you know, to both these things, talking about many of the same subjects, really just sets yourself up for something of a, you know, multiple centers of power and sort of a war of who has the president's ear kind of thing. It's not as though the HSC and the NSC are dealing with completely different topics, you know, especially dealing with threats we're dealing with today, which merge both those things. Obviously, our biggest threat, you know, terrorism, ISIS, the remnants of Al-Qaeda, et cetera, those are, you know, bring both the expertise of HSC and NSC there. So why not make them the same thing?
Right. It wasn't in the first memo, but I've seen it reported that the director of the CIA is going to be added to the principal staff. And that seems strange in the sense that you remove the director of national intelligence, who is supposed, at least on the line diagram, is supposed to be above the director of the CIA. He's removed from the principal working group, but the director of CIA is added.
Right. That was did seem really strange to me. I mean, I know in Washington bureaucrat lands, the CIA is considered its own center of power there, you know, as being the largest subcomponent of national intelligence organization. But to have him go to the meetings and the actual principal of the DNI not go, again, speaks to maybe that's this is being built around personalities, vice fitting the personalities into the right slot in the organization chart. If the president has more personal faith in the director of the CIA, then maybe you should have made him DNI, you know, would be the argument I'd make there.
Or maybe the CIA just retains a really good publicity department and they have been able to amass power even when DNI, after the creation of the Director of National Intelligence.
I think there's something to that. It's kind of like, the Marine Corps, the intelligence community, that, you know, the best propaganda arm among the competing divisions within there.
Right, right. And I think that another issue, and it's something that you and I benefit from, we are definitely people who have kind of made a second life online discussing military and national security issues. But it seems that with the rise of, this sounds almost lame to say, but with the rise of the internet and social media, that so many people have an opinion on every memorandum sent out by the president.
Right. I think that's true. I think you get a whole lot of chaff, you know, before, obviously, with, you know, the three big networks and major papers, you had sort of a party line. And now every single person is their own analyst. You know, only the nerdiest of national security wonks would have concerned themselves the organization, the NSC, even 10 or 15 years ago. And now it's all over, you know, 20 types of social media.
Right. And I've seen that. I'm very positive of this. It is legal what the president did. I think Lawrence Tribe may have written this, that probably one of the best sum ups is it's legal, but possibly not advisable. But you'll see, you know, on social media that he's illegally changed this, the constituents of the National Security Council.
Yeah, I saw that argument. And you see a major journalist, you know, post something about the illegality of it. And to a layperson, it seems, well, that makes sense. You know, that person's read and I haven't. Then you look at some of the more specialized sites. I was looking at Lawfare earlier today about it. And it seems a consensus that it is legal. But then again, as a news observer, you really have to be careful about who you're getting your news from, especially when it talks about, you know, specialized subjects, you know, like law, things like that, where the layperson doesn't have the backgrounds, even if you've worked in national security, to really make a legal analysis.
Oh, yeah, I will. I definitely defer and always read. And if our listeners are interested in a little more in-depth discussion of this, Lawfare is the preeminent site for anything in the national security legal realm.
So, oh, I concur. It's a great site.
So, Carl, what else do you see coming down the pike as far as changes with the military or strategy with President Trump?
Well, I think, you know, staying in this line here, I think personality-driven nature of this, I know some people applaud that, some people much less so, but I think that's going to continue to drive discussion and drive what we do. And that's why these changes in the structure, I think, do merit a lot of attention, because we are dealing with a president that doesn't have formal government experience. And some people view that as a huge positive. Some people are more skeptical. You know, if it were George H.W. Bush who was doing these changes, I think a lot of people would say, well, he seems, you know, he has the experience in the field to know what he's doing, you know, having, you know, done what he's done. When you've got the president leaning heavily on some key advisors and you're seeing this reorganization, and it's happening so quickly with a lot of news breaking every day, I think it's going to rock the Defense Department kind of back and forth, and all the national security components sort of trying to figure out what they're doing along with the president's key staff.
Yeah, I kind of put you on the spot there asking what you foresaw. And I had that same thing happen when I was a guest on a podcast. And I think I wasn't as concise as you, because I just said, I don't know what could happen. To predict what this administration would do, I couldn't guess. But we'll be here to comment on it when it does happen.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's a cacophony out there, and hopefully people listen to some, you know, the more analytical places, not just the ones that's emotionalized about it.
Right. And I hope they continue to follow you over at Task and Purpose. And really thank you for being on today. Anything else you want to plug or any other things you're doing? Or are you just getting back to dominating aviation in the contracting world?
Well, getting snapped into a new location and continuing to write and looking for other venues to do that in. And got a piece coming out in Marine Corps Gazettes in a couple months. And so if you're a Marine, subscribes, look for that. Other than that, that's about it.
That's always behind that paywall, isn't it?
Usually is. But for the Marines out there, I still got to give a shout out for them and do some more specialized pieces. The pop culture stuff is great, but sometimes you like to get in the weeds.
Right, right. Well, thank you again. Have a great day.
No problem. You too.
This episode of Military Justice is brought to you by the good people at Blue Apron. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free, including free shipping, by going to blueapron.com/military. You will love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. I've mentioned the convenience and flexibility of Blue Apron before. Again, it's great food, easy to prepare, and it makes for interesting meals throughout the week. But recently, I flew to Kansas City. I was doing an interview for the Military Justice Podcast with a retired recon Marine. It's going to be a great episode that's coming up here probably in a month or so. So I'm flying back from Kansas City, and the computers for this particular airline go completely down. So I spent about 20 hours in the Salt Lake City airport with nothing to do and knowing I wouldn't make it back home in time for my Blue Apron delivery. But no problem. I just got on the Blue Apron app on my iPhone and I rescheduled the delivery. It was actually really simple. I then got home, the meals got rescheduled, delivered to the house. I cooked them, saved some leftovers for Uber producer Dreadnought, and all was well in the world. So I can't stress enough, Blue Apron is the most convenient food delivery you can get. That's blueapron.com/military. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. If you like what we've been doing here on Military Justice, we would greatly appreciate it if you could leave a review on iTunes. It helps new listeners to find the show, thus it helps the show stay on the air. And as always, if you leave a review, you have a pretty good chance of having it read here on the podcast. For example, Sinja. She writes, or he writes, quote, "I enjoy this podcast and have enjoyed Wyrick as a guest on other podcasts. Hosting a podcast is new to him, and I appreciate his listening to feedback and making improvements based on that feedback," unquote. Well, thank you. And even if you leave a bad review, it will get read. For example, Travis DD214, quote, "Bit of a snowflake, and your military knowledge is off. But you are a JAG, so that's to be expected," unquote. Travis, thank you. I've always felt in my heart that I was a snowflake. I feel lighter already, and I feel special and unique in the universe. I really would like to thank Travis and Travis DD214. DD214 is the document you get when you leave the military. So, Travis, thank you for your service, and thank you for the review of Military Justice. These iTunes reviews are important. It helps new listeners find Military Justice, and the more listeners we have, the longer we stay on the interwebs. So no matter what your review is, although I do appreciate good ones, please feel free to go over to iTunes and navigate your way through and leave a review. It's greatly appreciated, especially by Uber producer Dreadnought. Saved Rounds and Alibis, the portion of the podcast where I answer questions from you, the listener. And thank you for keeping these questions coming. It really helps me to shape the show and to respond to what you, the listener, wants to hear. The first question is from Mark G. He asks, "Discuss Bergdahl's choice to select military judge alone or members for sentencing." First, excellent question, Mark. Sorry I didn't get to this earlier. In the military justice system, well, let me go back for a second. There will be some changes under the UCMJ in the future as to which kind of sentencing there will be. But for the purposes of this discussion and the Bergdahl case, there are two selections that can be made. If Sergeant Bergdahl is found guilty of absence without leave, meaning that he left his base voluntarily, he has two choices. He can either be sentenced by military judge alone or by members. And remember, members in the military system are the equivalent of jurors. In this case, the most probable scenario, if the government's case can withstand the difficulties it has in proof, if Sergeant Bergdahl is found guilty, he would most likely be found guilty of a short-term AWOL. That means he was gone for a short amount of time, and then it was his capture in Afghanistan by unfriendly forces that prevented him from coming back earlier. So probably a short-term AWOL or unauthorized absence. In that case, there will be some statutory boundaries as far as his possible sentencing. That being said, there's some common thoughts about military judge alone or member sentencing. I would say for military judge sentencing, you're usually looking at someone who has seen many crimes, many trials, either as a defense counsel or a prosecutor or both, long before ever becoming a military judge, and then as a military judge, seeing many cases. In the Bergdahl case, it would be, because it's a felony or general court-martial, it would be a pretty senior judge hearing the case. So that judge has seen many courts over the years. You have a general idea of what that judge would give as a sentence. Again, because the judge has seen these things before. Maybe not the exact scenario from the Bergdahl case, but similar types of cases. On the other side, member sentencing. Member sentencing is usually used in cases where maybe the passions of the members might be swayed in favor of the defendant. I don't see that happening as much in the Bergdahl case. Your members are usually senior enlisted, fairly senior enlisted, or officers. And at this point, almost everybody in his jury pool, all the members, would have probably seen combat and been deployed. So they might be swayed a little more to be more in favor of punishment of Bergdahl. Where military judge alone, that judge has an idea of the left and right lateral limits of what the sentence should be, maybe not as swayed by emotion. So this is one of those times where it's really up to the intuition of the counsel. It's much like when you're waiting for a jury verdict. Everybody has their kind of thoughts about, well, if the jury stays out a long time, they're going to acquit. If the jury stays out a long time, they're going to convict. It can be the converse. So there's a lot of kind of wives' tale type knowledge. That being said, I would predict that if Bergdahl is found guilty, that he would select sentencing by military judge alone. Again, because the judge, you're just trained so much as a lawyer and a judge to keep extraneous information out of your mind. I'm not saying that we do it perfectly. It's administered by humans, so it's foul. It's fallible. But for the most part, we've been trained for many years to always keep extraneous information out of our minds. And I think that would probably inure to the benefit of Bergdahl in that case. Thanks again, Mark G. Hope that answered your question. The second one isn't a question. It's just a really nice note I got from Nanette. Nanette lives at the back gate of Camp Pendleton, a base I served at for a number of years. And that's in Oceanside, California, beautiful base right outside of San Diego. And she writes, quote, Mr. Wyrick, you can just call me Wyrick. I enjoy listening to the workings of military justice and sometimes history of military proceedings. On this week's podcast, you mentioned Thomas Jefferson and his VP, Aaron Burr, who you stated, quote, went on to shoot someone. Forgive me for paraphrasing. That someone was Alexander Hamilton, founder of the U.S. Coast Guard. If you or anyone you know is in to any kind of historical Broadway productions, for example, Hamilton, I know you weren't leaving Coasties out of the mix again. I'm pretty sure you received numerous pieces of mail about this, but I also wanted to thank you for sticking with the Coasties. They are all too often get left out of all things military. I have numerous friends who are in the Coast Guard, including my very own partner in crime and life. So thank you for not leaving the Coasties out. I hope you listeners will be prompted to remember our servicemen and women who serve to protect our shores. Kindly, Nanette. Nanette, thank you very much for that. And I never forget our Coasties. In fact, just today, I was probably speaking with, I was actually for sure speaking with probably the preeminent Coast Guard JAG of all time. And I hope to have him on the show pretty soon. So all my love goes out to the Coast Guard and the Coasties. Nanette, thank you for giving us a little historical background. And I think we should all go see Hamilton on Broadway. That's all for this week. Wyrick out. Military Justice is brought to you by executive producer Dennis Robinson. Follow him at Twitter at DenERob or go to the show notes for his email address. Editing and mixing for Military Justice, also known as Fixing All of My Mistakes, is done by the talented Rebecca Lavoy, host of the podcast Crime Writers On and the co-host of These Are Their Stories, the Law and Order podcast. Those are both must-listen-to podcasts. Finally, I have to thank my Uber producer, Dreadnought. Thanks, big man. You've always got my six. Wyrick out.